welcome in to the Illini Inquirer podcast. It is Jeremy Werner, Illini Inquirer publisher. Today on the podcast, Kyle Tosk, Illini basketball reporter for us here at Illini Inquirer. He joins me to break down what he saw at the Riverside Brookfield shootout this weekend. It's one of the best in-state basketball events of the year. Every June, the best in-state teams, the best in-state talent shows up, and loads of college coaches come and see them. Great evaluation opportunity. So Kyle Tosk will break down what he saw from some of the Illini's targets, and Brad Underwood, Tyler Underwood, and Zach Hamer all made their appearances because they wanted to be seen by Brady Pettigrew, the five-star guard out of Bolingbrook, and Cole Kelly, top 50 prospect in the class of 2028. And Pettigrew could be 2028, or is he 2027? Kyle breaks that down, and he breaks down what he saw from Cole Kelly as well. And it was another chance for him to see Mason Martin, the 2027 Illini commit sharpshooter. Kyle breaks down how he is developing his game as well. And after Kyle, I chat with new Illini softball coach Jenna Hall. It was great to catch up with the Illini great, the Illini grad, and the third Illinois softball coach in program history. Talk to her about getting this job, what this place, her alma mater, means to her, what she thinks it can be in softball, and the challenges she has ahead for her. So it was great catching up with Jenna Hall, who's trying to infuse this softball program that's had success in the past, including under former coach Tyra Perry, but the last 4 or 5 years just taken a downturn. So it was great catching up with Jenna Hall, and I think you'll enjoy that as well. Before we get to Kyle and Jenna, I do want to give a short Illinois football recruiting update. Don Spillers, the three-star athlete out of Detroit, Michigan, he committed to Michigan State today over Illinois, so he decides to stay in-state. Instead of playing wide receiver at Illinois, he will play safety at Michigan State. The Spartans, a lot of turmoil in that school and athletic department right now, but Pat Fitzgerald has a lot of resources at his disposal, and he is recruiting really well, and Illinois has missed out on some targets to Michigan State here in the last month with Spillers, Matthew Brady out of Bloomington Central Catholic, and Henry Sakalis, the linebacker out of Nazareth Academy. He is going to Michigan State as well. But a big decision on Tuesday, a big recruitment for the Illini, is Bennett Conkey, now a four-star prospect by 24/7 Sports. The four-star Geneva wide receiver will announce his decision, and that's coming right after an official visit for Illinois. That usually bodes well, especially considering he canceled official visits now to Indiana and Wisconsin, so we will not make those trips. His final four is Northwestern, Illinois, Iowa, and Iowa State. I think Iowa and Northwestern are the top competition here. Illinois has been in there for the last couple months, and Justin Stepp has pushed really hard. Got to like the sell of wide receivers for Illinois over those programs, what Justin Stepp and Barry Lunney have done with this offense, including in the passing game. So you got to like their sell there. Northwestern has made him a big, big target. Obviously, Iowa has a lot of success, but not at the wide receiver in the passing game. But I think it'll come down to Illinois, Northwestern. Some think it'll come down to Illinois, Iowa. But coming after an official visit to Illinois, that seems to be a good sign, but we will find out on Tuesday if Illinois can add a four-star headliner, another top in-state prospect to the class of 2027. Give that a boost right now. They're sitting at 9 commitments. Justin Johnson, the four-star headliner in that one. Mason Howellman and Soren Pfeiffer, two good in-state gets as well, along with Sean Rice, the linebacker out of St. Louis. But to add Conkey, you feel even better about the class that is happening right now. Currently 60th in the country, 18th in the Big Ten. It's a small class. That's going to play a big role of this. But I understand everyone that now, with Illinois setting the high standard that it does, you want to win more four-star recruitments. Bennett Conkey certainly would be that, according to 24/7 Sports. So we'll have an update on Illinois football recruiting on the podcast, more in-depth one later this week as well. But let's talk some Illini basketball with Kyle Tosk, talk some recruiting on that end, and then we'll hear from Illini softball coach Jenna Hall coming up next on the Illini Inquirer podcast. Guys, you can feel that heat. The summer is here. That means trips to the pool and the golf course and grilling out in the backyard. I got my Blackstone fired up and been grilling a ton. And of course, Father's Day is on June 21st. And Dad doesn't want another tire watch, guys. You know what he wants? He wants the tender, juicy taste of his favorite grilled steak. to perfection. Shop omahasteaks.com, and that's where you can get your high-quality steaks and meats perfect for grilling season this summer. Plus, you get an extra $35 off with promo code Illini at checkout. See site for details. Omaha Steaks has sent me all of their meats, guys, and every steak and every entree is flash frozen, vacuum sealed at the moment of carving, so no matter when your dad enjoys his meal, it will taste as fresh as the day it was carved. The fan favorite filet mignon, I've had a couple of those. They've earned the distinction of USDA certified very tender. So give dad a license to grill with a gift from Omaha Steaks. This Father's Day, give the dad in your life something to savor. World-famous Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com and get an extra $35 off with promo code Illini at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com and an extra $35 off with promo code Illini at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. All right, let's bring in Kyle Tosk, Illini Inquirer basketball reporter. Kyle, good to see you. Had a good weekend at Riverside Brookfield, one of my favorite recruiting events to do. I know Derek Piper loved Peach Jam, especially in its heyday back in the day before COVID. But if you like Illinois basketball, and I know we're losing a lot of talent, but Illinois high school basketball, that's a pretty cool event to go to.
Yeah, great experience there. My first time there, but super well organized, well run, easy to keep an eye on a couple different games at once and maneuver your way around, and a ton of coaches there. It's like over 150, 170 schools had coaches there at that event. Every school that matters in the state is playing in that thing. All the players that are still in state, the ones that haven't left the state are playing there. So that was, yeah, it was a great weekend. Fun to watch some hoops, talk to some guys that Illinois has made priorities, one Illinois commit, and yeah, it's never complain about watching some good basketball.
Well, we'll get your thought on some pretty good basketball players, including Brady Pettigrew and Cole Kelly, top targets in the class of 2028, or maybe one in 2027. I'll ask you about Mason Martin, the line I commit, the latest we've seen from him. We'll talk a little bit about some of the guys leaving the state, and one more target who's visiting Illinois this week. But before we dive into this, right before we got on here to record, Boise State announced that Ty Rogers sustained a lower body injury. I've seen BJ Raines, who covers the team, he used to cover the St. Louis Cardinals as well, say that is a knee injury. He suffered that during the first week of practice with Boise State. Just gutting news, Kyle. After what he's been through, I mean, he chose to redshirt 2 years ago, but then redshirts last year because of the patella injury, and now suffering an injury right as he gets to Boise State. Just, this is one of the good guys, as Joey tweeted, in college basketball. I just think he's such a good culture guy, such a hard worker. We almost forget what he was like on the floor, but just energy, effort. I think he's got a long career as a coach if he wants to be that. You hope his basketball career is not over with this. But that's where your mind has to go, right? With two serious injuries like this, just gutting. I hate seeing it for Ty Rogers, a guy I've loved covering.
Yeah, that's just awful. And the way it sounded on that Boise State release sounded like another pretty serious leg injury, knee injury, whatever the case may be, which it's just unfair, man. A guy that has come in and he's done everything right in college, and his career hasn't necessarily gone the way that maybe he would have expected it to, and part of that was his own decision-making with the redshirt year and whatever the case may be. But you hear his teammates talk about him at Illinois, the teammate that he's been, the locker room guy, the culture guy that he's been, how great he's been with the media his entire, like, just to your point, a really great basketball player, but a heck of a person too. And to see that happen to a guy like that is pretty gutting news, because this is somebody who has waited a long time to get back on the basketball court here in game action. I thought it was a great fit for him when he chose Boise State. I was excited to monitor how his season was going to go, because he's still a really, really talented player, and you hope that this doesn't, to your point, end his career, keep him out for super extended time again, because he clearly wants to keep playing basketball, and hopefully he can still do that, because it's brutal to have that happen 2 years in a row. It seems like sports are unfair like that. Things just happen to the guys that it shouldn't happen to, and that's really sucks to hear.
Yeah, when I think of the guys it shouldn't happen to, it sucks for any athlete, right? Like, whether you like them or not, it sucks for any athlete. This is a part of sports, though, is injuries, the toll it takes on your body, the the freakish things they can do. It also comes with the downside of the injuries that can occur because of it. But it reminds you of Tracy Abrams, who is a very similar kind of person, player to Ty, and he's gone on to do great things in the Chicago community. But Mike Dudek was another one. That's just like, man, that guy's going to have injuries. He was on his track to one of the legendary Illini careers and really was such a bright spot in a down period of Illinois football. That every year it seemed like injury, injury. And it's just like that guy went through hell. And you hope it works out for them long term because they've been through all of that adversity, but it still sucks to see them all go through it. So we're wishing the best to Ty, man. Get better, and hopefully we get to see him on a basketball court at some point. But hopefully there's a silver lining down the line of all of this for him. All right, Kyle, let's dive into, though, what you got to see on the basketball court this weekend. We didn't know if you'd be able to see Brady Pettigrew because he is, Team USA. He's working out with them this week, so we didn't know if he would participate at all at the Riverside-Brookfield shootout, but he did. Sounds like he did pretty well, Kyle. So seeing him up close, what stood out about five-star 2028 guard out of Bolingbrook, Brady Pettigrew?
Yeah, he was only there for one day on Friday, but he put on quite a show while he was there. And he really only played three halves because he sat for pretty much the entire second half against Neuqua Valley in his second game and said that was kind of his plan to take it somewhat easy before he left for Team USA U-17 training camp in Colorado over the weekend. But he was really, really impressive. He was, you know, there's a lot of really talented Division I basketball players in that gym, and he was the best one there. And I know it's been kind of a little bit of a friendly rivalry between him and Cole Kelly, who know each other really well, going back to like second grade, have played against each other on AAU, and there's been a debate in the state about who the top player is. Both those guys are really good, and both those guys went at each other in the first half when Bolingbrook played Neuqua Valley, and I think Brady probably won that matchup, although Cole was pretty good in that game too. But you know, Brady takes the ball first possession and just straight ISOs Cole and hits a jumper in his face on the first play of that game. Just you could tell that was something that he wanted to prove. But in his first game that he played against East St. Louis, he missed probably four of his first five shots and then took over in the second half. That's the reigning 3A champs, East St. Louis, a really talented team with a lot of athleticism, and he dominated the second half of that game. Just an incredible athlete. Like, he just is really fluid, attacks the rim really hard, plays above the rim in transition. He's a menace. I mean, he's impossible to stop if he gets ahead of steam in the open floor. Plays through contact really well. Like, he's just a powerful, explosive athlete, and I think that's why when you look at the top prospects in the state or the top prospects that Illinois is going after, he's got the highest ceiling to me because he has the physical tools paired with, you know, all the production that he's put forth at Bolingbrook playing for Brad Beal Elite on EYBL, where he's averaging like 24 points a game this spring. He's just a really, really fun player to watch and has the physical tools that I think make him really enticing to go with a pretty smooth jumper, mid-range pull-up. The three-point shot's been inconsistent, but he certainly, I think, will be a good shooter. He's just got a lot to his game, and he's one of those really high upside guys that you take a lot of really exciting athleticism, physical tools, and then just a heck of a competitor too. And to me, I know he's a top 15 guy in 2028. I think he's going to be a bona fide five-star, maybe borderline top 10 type of guy when that class rolls around, if he stays in that class, which might not happen either, because I do think that he might be trending towards the 2027 reclass.
Let's talk about that in a minute. Give me a comp. Like, college basketball player, Big Ten basketball player recently. You got a comp for me?
I suck with comps. I mean, I think you mentioned Trey McKinney before. Yeah. I do see some of that.
Just like, body, right? Combo guard, yeah.
Combo guard. Good athlete. It's not maybe quite as built as Trey is, because Trey came into Michigan like 220 pounds or something like that, but he's strong. He's really built. You know, I think, like, I don't know, it's not perfect, but I think there's some similarities to like what Malachi Branham was at Ohio State. Maybe he's a better athlete than he was, but in terms of kind of his mid-range jumper and his ability to get downhill, I don't have a perfect one, but I don't know if you have a
those
better
are pretty good
one,
players. But, no, there's like bigger body combo guards. Like I think Brady's going to continue to fill out, and he's already got a pretty strong frame as it is. But I like those kind of comps. He's just a player that's going to make an immediate impact. And I think no matter what class he goes into, I'd written about a month ago, Kyle, that there's some buzz that he could reclassify to the class of 2027. I would think that would bode well for Illinois. That's been a major, major player here. And they need a 2027 guard, right? Because Stephon Vaux, potentially an NBA prospect. Quentin Coleman, not outside the realm of possibility that he could be an NBA draft prospect after next year. So they need to refill that backcourt, and I think Brady Pettigrew would make a lot of sense to be the next guy in line there. But where do you think about where Illinois stands, especially if he does reclassify?
Yeah, I think Illinois is in a really good spot for him. He told me unprompted before I even asked about it that Illinois was the school that he had been hearing from most and that had been the most aggressive and that his relationships are the strongest with right now. So I think he's a top priority for Illinois. I do think, based on my conversation that I had with him, he didn't read between the lines a little bit. He's enrolled in summer school. Now, he sounded like a guy who has full intention of probably making that leap to 2027. And, he's 17 years old. He's the age of an incoming high school senior, and he's only going into his junior year. So I think it would make a lot of sense for him to do that. And I think Illinois would make a lot of sense from that standpoint, too. To your point, they've been pretty aggressive, shooting pretty big at the guard spot in 2027. And I think he is a guy that they've obviously recruited here for a while, and I think he fits a lot of what Illinois likes. And I do think, based on what I heard and what my conversation was with him, I would say Arkansas is probably the other one that I would maybe concern myself with a little bit, because I know he's really, really good friends with Davion Thompson, former teammates there at Bolingbrook, who just committed to Arkansas. And I know that that was the school that he had brought up right alongside Illinois. But I think, he made mention of the in-state factor. He's one of those. We'll talk about it in a little bit. There's a lot of guys that are leaving the state. He's not one of those. He does take some pride in that, and he mentioned about how Illinois has made that pitch to him of the in-state sell, staying home, and that does mean something to him. So I think Illinois is in a pretty good spot there, and I do think 2027 is probably where the focus is going to end up being for that.
Can we just sit here and pause for a second? A five-star guard in-state, Illinois, is sitting pretty well with. They've recruited really well. He's just been around the team a lot. He's visited quite a bit here. He went to the Chicago game last year at the United Center. Illinois should be the major player there, right? Because you think of what they've developed at that position. Kasper Siakashonis. I mean, you can go back to Io DeSumo and Terrence Shannon, but Kasper Siakashonis, Will Riley, now Keaton Wagler, Stephon Vaux, and Quentin Coleman. This is another step, Kyle, where they are recruiting and developing guards as well as anybody. Like Arkansas, phenomenal sell with Darius Acuff and all of the guards that John Calipari has had throughout his Kentucky time and now Arkansas time. I think of some of the guys that have gone through those programs, but Illinois has one of the best guard sales in all of college basketball. So it's weird that now it doesn't feel crazy that a five-star guard in the state doesn't have to go to Kansas or Kentucky or to Duke to be what he wants to be. Like, Illinois has as good of a sell as really almost any of those schools.
Yeah, and you almost reach a point now where you're like, yeah, Illinois should get that guy. I'd be disappointed if Illinois doesn't get that guy. Like, it's just – and, I think the guard sell that Illinois has, it's resonating for sure. Like, when you talk to some of these guys, Keaton Wagler's name comes up, Terrence Shannon Jr.'s name comes up, the NBA development, like, that's a big thing. You look at these five stars and these guys that, hey, they're entering college, and it doesn't work out for all of them, but all these guys are entering college with the idea that they probably only want to play 1 year in college and make the leap to the NBA. Now Illinois has those one-and-dones and can sell that as well as, hey, we can be a one-year path for guys and enter the one-and-done sweepstakes, which for a long time was only, five or six programs that were getting all the one-and-done guys. And I think, no doubt, I think this one, it makes a ton of sense, and you feel like Illinois should be in as good a spot as anybody. And when you go out and you shoot big, Illinois shooting really highly for talented guards 2027, 2028, and they should be, and they should feel like they can get one of them or how, whatever guy that they like. So I think, yeah, Illinois is in a great spot from that standpoint. And, you know, you got to capitalize. When you have this line of development that Illinois had, now you have the team success in the Final Four to pair with it. It's all come together. You got to capitalize on that, and you got to take that out and reel in some big-time talent when you have that to sell.
Another big-time talent, though, Cole Kelly. We've talked a lot about him in recent, really recent months here. Neuqua Valley went up head to toe-to-toe with Brady Pettigrew, 2028 forward wing, 6'6", playmaker, Kyle. As you've mentioned a lot of times, just fits a lot of the things the Illini like. So you got to see his game up close yet again. What stood out to you about Cole Kelly?
Yeah, he didn't probably have his best weekend that he's capable of having. Like, I didn't think he was fantastic in any of the four games that he played, and yet you still come away watching him feel like, man, he impacts the game in a ton of ways, even when he isn't having 30-40 points, which he's more than capable of doing. You know, he makes an impact on the game, and his feel, his vision, his natural playmaking ability at that size, it's no wonder. As soon as you watch him play and grab a defensive rebound, initiate offense, handle ball, like, yeah, Illinois likes that guy. It makes a ton of sense to me. It jives 100%. He's just a complete player. I mean, that's how I'd describe him. Like, I don't know if he necessarily has one like elite skill, but he does everything really well, and he truly is a really good processor and playmaker, has great vision. I think, you know, he's one of those like big kind of jumbo wing playmakers that are kind of, you know, not only at the college level but at the NBA level as pro prospects are really the guys that everybody's chasing right now. But his effort too, like on the offensive glass, really, really tenacious, physical there, aggressive driver. And you know, he still can add a lot of strength, but man, he does not shy away from contact. He can throw guys off of him, get into the rim, really physical, forceful driver. And he made 73s as a high school senior. Didn't make a ton of them this weekend when I saw him, but he's got a smooth lefty jumper too. He can score it from all three levels, just does a little bit everything on the floor. He's not anywhere near the level of athlete that a guy like Brady Pettigrew is, and that'll probably be his biggest question mark translating to the college level. But you know, when you can do all the things that he can do, when you have the feel he has, when you have the ability to play with the ball in his hands like he has, it makes a ton of sense why Illinois would make that guy a top priority. I think he fits everything Illinois loves perfectly.
Yeah, the comp I was given for him to save you from me asking you that question, Kyle, was Brooks Barnheiser with a better jumper. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. That's a really good player. And you imagine him in that Illinois system, and I think – like, you can use him like you use Marcus Damask, right? Like, as a big playmaker, mismatch hunter that has all that spacing to create plays. And then you add the rebounding on top. A just tough, physical dude. One of my favorite players that's come out of the state. He's just a lot of fun to watch. What did you take away from him? What he told you about his recruitment? Because, boy, he's got a lot of options. I imagine those options are just going to grow throughout the summer here, Kyle. But Illinois has been a consistent presence in this recruitment.
They have, yep. Illinois was the first to offer him. They offered him before he ever even played a high school game, before his freshman year, and that relationship has been a long time coming. But, yeah, it seems like the whole Midwest is getting in on his recruitment. It's good. There's a lot of Big Ten interest there. Matt Painter was in attendance both days that Neuqua Valley played, watching very closely. I know he took an unofficial visit to Purdue earlier in the spring. Purdue just offered him. There was an Iowa assistant that was there both days watching him, and he took an unofficial visit to Iowa here recently. So it could end up being a Big Ten battle. I know Nebraska's involved, Ohio State just offered. I think Notre Dame actually just offered today. Creighton's in there. Missouri's in there. So, you know, he listed a lot of schools, pretty much all of them right around the Midwest, a lot of Big Ten. But he talks very highly of Illinois. He's been to Illinois many times. He came during his freshman year. He came for a game last year. He came for on an unofficial during a football weekend last year. He was in Chicago when Illinois played Alabama at the United Center. So he's been around Illinois a lot. He can tell. I mean, he brings up all the things that we've talked about how his fit and how Illinois really fits his style. And so I think Illinois is in a good spot there. It's a good relationship that they've built for a long time, and it certainly doesn't hurt having Mason Martin on board already, because those two guys are incredibly close. Those two guys have a really good chemistry together and are really close friends. That obviously won't make or break anything, but a nice little card Illinois has in their back pocket there too.
Yeah, well, I want to bring up that in-state factor here in a moment, but you got to look at Mason Martin. Again, I know you saw a high school game, Neuqua Valley, early in the season last year, so that's been about, what, 6 months since you saw him then. Obviously, you could change your body a lot. I know Mason's working on that. It's going to take a while. Yep. But what do you think of his development, the 2027 commit out of Neuqua Valley, and what are his next steps?
Yeah, I mean, he is absolutely everything he's billed to be as a three-point shooter. Elite shooter, quick release, can get that thing off lightning fast, is always looking to shoot. Neuqua Valley runs him off some screening stuff. He moves. He can shoot on the move. He can spot up. He can pull up. A really, really good three-point shooter that needs to add more to his game to be a Big Ten contributor, I think. And I think Illinois knows that. And I think you take the elite skill, which is three-point shooting. You take probably – I think definitely the best shooter in the state, one of the most consistent shooters anywhere in the country. And then you try to develop some of the other things, because I do think he's pretty limited in what his game is right now. He's three-point shooting, and that's, you know, the most of the extent to what he has. Now, I will say he was pretty good this weekend. I saw, you know, Cole Kelly gets so much attention offensively, and I think he's gotten better at cutting to the basket a little bit more and playing off of that attention, not just floating around the three-point line. But I think that's something that can really help him. And I will give him credit. Like, he's very skinny right now. Like, he needs to add a lot of strength. When you look on the floor, doesn't pop. Like, you look at that team, and yeah, Cole Kelly, the second you walk into the gym, oh yeah, that guy's the Division I recruit. It's not necessarily the case with Mason Martin. He is 6'5", but he's very skinny right now. But he is physical. Like, he'll go in there. He was battling on the glass. He will drive it. He can't, you know, he doesn't have a great first step. He's not blowing by people, but he will drive it into people's chests. He'll drive into contact. He took a lot of that this weekend. So I think as he develops his body, I mean, he's shown a willingness to add some different things. And you use the shooting as your foundation, and then you become, I think, as you project him to the college level, like, he's not going to be a star in college, but can he be, you know, the Jake Davis type of role player, you know, who does a lot of little things and is a really reliable shooter and plays his role really well? I think that's what Illinois sees as his future. And I think, you know, he'll have to develop a lot more, but, you know, he's shown a willingness, and the shooting is absolutely real.
Yeah, I mean, can he be a Fletcher Lawyer? Can he be a McQuaid from Michigan State? Like, I think that's kind of what you're looking at, because in this system, man, we see what a Jake Davis can do. Like, the offensive efficiency when Jake Davis is on the floor is way higher for Illinois, just because of the gravity that kind of shooter who can shoot 40%+ can bring. But you do have to do those other things, and Jake is a capable – I wouldn't say he's a great defender, but he's a capable defender who's where he's supposed to be, can hold up. He's got obviously a stronger body than Mason at this point, but doing those little things, like cuts to the basket, Jake does really well. So I agree. That's kind of his next step, right, is just adding a little bit elsewhere so that you can stay on the court longer.
Right. Yeah, I think he'll need to do that, because, you know, I think as he currently is as a prospect, like, I think he'd find a hard time seeing the floor for Illinois. But of course, he has another year still to develop, and I do think that's one that when he gets to campus a year from now, it will take him a little bit of time. I think he probably won't be an immediate impact guy. Now, hey, you shoot it that well, and I think that there is value for you on the floor. But I think for him to be, you know, a true firmly in a Big Ten rotation for Illinois, the physical thing is the, you know, and I know it's an easy thing to say for a lot of guys, but for him, like, yes, he needs to eat. He needs to hit the weight room. I think even that first summer with that, Adam Fletcher a year from now will do a world of good for him, because he is one of the skinnier prospects that I've seen. But you know, I think you have a guy that is that good of a three-point shooter and can provide you value in that way. That's the reason that Illinois made him a priority. Now you take the rest of his game, develop it a little bit more, and I think you certainly can have a productive Big Ten role player at some point.
And Brad Underwood and Tyler Underwood, Zach Kamer, all there watching all three of those guys. Makes a lot of sense. I do want to mention that. But we did get more news over the weekend about more guys leaving the state. We knew Quentin Kitt was leaving, the Illinois commit in the class of 2027, leaving from East Peoria to go to Monarch in Kansas City. He announced that this week, a new prep school. Jackson Davis, the one guy who felt like he was staying, he's leaving for his senior year. Said he wants to get better. He wants to play better talent, top talent. So can't blame him. It seems like Illinois has been in the periphery of that recruitment. I don't think they're going to push. I think Brady Pettigrew in the class of 2027 would be the top target there. They like big guards, obviously. But Davis is probably going to play in the Big Ten. I would imagine Iowa, Michigan State, some others very, very involved there. He's going to Monarch. And then another kid out of the Peoria area, Amarian Smith-Holly, he's going to Link Academy in Missouri. So none of these kids basically stay in state. Mason Martin's going to stay at Neuqua Valley. We'll see if Cole Kelly and Brady Pettigrew stay through it. I mean, they're in their junior seasons. Could be Brady Pettigrew's last year of high school, but I would imagine it's going to be Brady Pettigrew versus Cole Kelly for Mr. Basketball in the state of Illinois. I mean, does it matter all that much? It makes sense for these kids to play against top talent. It just stinks for Champaign-Urbana, Kyle, when all these guys leave and you finally get the state finals back. And none of these guys are involved in it, right? Like that's what stinks, is because the last 2-3 years of high school basketball prospects in this state have been awesome, like really good, but they don't stay around to play their final high school ball seasons here.
Yeah, I mean, these last few classes, especially the 2027 class, which as it stands right now, Mason Martin might be the top prospect in the state, and that class, and it's nothing against Mason, but that class was loaded with like 4 or 5, like it was shaping up to be one of the more loaded classes in the state here. And now all those guys have left. Jackson Davis, Davion Thompson, Devin Cleveland, all these guys have left the state now. And it is a bummer. It's a bummer for the state of Illinois. It's a bummer for Champaign-Urbana. It's a bummer for high school basketball fans in the state. And it does make a lot of sense, though. I mean, it just, you can't blame these kids for making this decision, especially in the climate that we're in now with all the money that's going around. I will make note of the fact that, yes, we think about, you know, NIL opportunities in college. High school prospects can make NIL money, too, and going to these premier prep schools is the way to build up a brand at the high school level, too, and open up some of those opportunities along with the development, which it just is. It's, you know, the development, these prep schools, these elite prep schools, not only do they play top talent around the country, not only is the coaching to a different level, but these are basketball focused schools. You know, the school part is secondary, the basketball is first and foremost. And for a lot of these kids that have NBA dreams and dreams to play high major Division I college basketball, like going all in on basketball for your junior or senior year of high school usually is something that's pretty appealing. So I don't blame anybody that's making this decision. It is a bummer, though.
It's a great point, too. There's money to be made at these schools.
Yes.
Like there is money to be made playing high school basketball. So just another factor in all of it. One more thing before I let you go, Kyle. 4-star 2028 guard Carter Smith is visiting Illinois on Tuesday. So you look at 2028 guards. Obviously, Pettigrew's been the top guy, but maybe he'll be in the class of 2027 if Illinois is able to land him. Don't know how much you've been able to look into him. I haven't yet. So what do you know of Carter Smith, and what do you think of him visiting?
Yeah, another really athletic guard, bouncy, above the rim, downhill guard, more of a combo, not necessarily a guy that's a true point or a true primary playmaker, but a combo, can play with the ball in his hands, and has some pretty intriguing physical tools also with his athleticism. Pretty good multi-positional defender too at 6'4" with some length to him. So it's an interesting one. I'll have to watch a little bit more of him and dive a little bit deeper into him, but I know what I think Penn State offered him recently there in state, and that, you know, he's pretty early in the process, and Kansas State's been involved with him a little bit from what I've seen. But yeah, that'll be an interesting one to get on campus, and just another pretty talented, you know, 4-star top 100 guard that Illinois is sniffing around with. Makes a ton of sense, as we talked about, with the sell Illinois has to cast that net very wide and looking for guard talent, because Illinois certainly is an appealing spot for these guys. And yeah, this is another definitely intriguing prospect.
I would say Illinois guard and wing recruiting in a pretty good space. And then you just think of, like, people are like, what about big guys? We'll probably find out about those Europeans later on, right? Like that. Yep. I think that's exactly where they're going, is going to go overseas because they have all these ties. Like Luigi Swigo, now that he's all signed and delivered to Villanova, if one of the Ivicic boys decided to go in the NBA draft, I'm almost certain Illinois would have had him. And that guy probably would have been a top 40 NBA draft pick. So, like, that's where they are overseas. That, like, they are so in over there with the agents. The development, obviously, here has been really, really good with all those players and what David and Tommy and Zvonimir are doing. So, just in a good spot, Kyle, all around. Just all the success you've had, the development you've had, the NBA development you've had, the European success. You're just drinking from a lot of talented pools. Right, and you're in a good spot in all of those places.
Yeah, I think it's pretty telling that there are very few legitimate front court priorities for Illinois on the prep recruiting trail, if any, right now. And I think that tells you all you need to know about probably where that's going to come from for Illinois next year. I think, why not, right? I mean, it to keep that pipeline flowing, and also the success that you've had in the front court with those guys. And I think, you know, a lot of times when you go international, I think, you know, and it's different for, but it's sometimes a little bit easier for those guys to translate immediately into the college level, as we've seen, versus some prep school big men who I think sometimes take a little bit longer to develop. So I think it makes a lot of sense for Illinois to take that route, to go heavy into the guard front domestically and internationally, use that front court pipeline that you've built up there. I think that's probably how we'll see this play out for Illinois here over the next however many years, because it's worked out pretty well for them. But yeah, it's, you know, there's so many different avenues that Illinois is using and using successfully, whether it is on the high school front. Illinois obviously still has plenty of appeal there internationally in the transfer portal. Oh yeah, you're bringing in the top 15 transfer that you went out and got to. So Illinois is in a really good spot. The talent accrual is probably one of the biggest strengths of this Illinois basketball program right now, as we've seen, which is one of the most important strengths to have as you try to compete for national titles.
And even if you got Quentin Coleman for a second year and say David Mirkovich for a third year, you still have a lot of cap space potentially opening up with the Ivicic boys, Stojakovic, potentially. You could have a fifth year, but you'd have a lot of space to go into the transfer portal and add somebody, too, that has some experience that fits your scheme as well. Well, Kyle Tosk, appreciate the time, as always, and the insight, man. We'll catch up soon.
Appreciate it, man.
Guys, I'm pushing 40. I've noticed the older I get, the less forgiving even a couple drinks can be the next morning. You feel like you're responsible. You have a couple beers, you get home at a reasonable time, drink some water, eat some food. You do everything right, yet you still wake up feeling kind of off the next day. Foggy, low energy, not fully yourself. That's why I tried Cheers Restore. And honestly, I was skeptical at first, but the difference the next morning really surprised me. I slept better, woke up feeling way more normal, and actually felt productive the next day instead of dragging through the morning. This is Cheers Restore after alcohol aid. You take it up after your last drink or before bed, and it works while you sleep. Cheers says you'll wake up feeling at least 50% better or your money back. It helps your body metabolize alcohol more efficiently and supports liver health with ingredients like DHM and cysteine. Cheers is backed by doctors, PhDs, and over 1,000 verified clinicians. They've sold over 50 million doses. It's available at Target, CVS, and Walgreens. But take Cheers Restore after your last drink or before bed and wake up feeling at least 50% off better or your money back. For a limited time, listeners are getting 20% off their order by using code Illini at CheersHealth.com. Just head to CheersHealth.com and use code Illini for 20% off. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them Illini Inquirer sent you. All right, happy to bring in Jenna Hall, the third softball coach in Illinois history, also an Illini Athletics Hall of Famer. Well, Jenna, how does that sound, head coach of Illinois softball?
I'm still getting used to it. Today I pulled up to the field, turn over there, and they already got my parking sign up. And I was like, oh, wow, this is getting real. So, no, I'm couldn't be more excited. I think I'm still in a little bit of the, can I believe this is actually happening, you know, phase. But with all the things that are going on, I definitely know it's real. So it's but it's an exciting time for sure.
I would imagine it's a better parking spot than when you were a player here, even though you're a pretty good player here.
Better parking spot and better facilities and better everything, as it should be. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. But I did, for some research before I chatted with you, I went back and listened to your Hall of Fame speech, which was great, by the way. I thought it was really authentic. The one detail I love, though, is there's a black eye tattoo somewhere on Jenna Hall. So when did that happen? How did that come to be?
Yeah, I was 25. I was living in Athens, Ohio, my first coaching gig, and kind of was getting into this tattoo phase, but I just really wanted one. I mean, Illinois has meant so much to me my whole life, and just seemed appropriate. So it's on my left foot on the top. It's got the block eye and it says loyalty underneath. So a hiding place for an early tattoo, you know, especially as a coach at other schools. So it wasn't like blasted in everybody's face, but yeah, it's been there ever since. I need to touch up. I will say it's been a minute. So I'm not 25 anymore, so I need to touch up. But yeah, it's there forever. It's permanent, and it's, you know, just an outward expression of what Illinois means to me on the inside.
I was gonna say, why does Illinois? And we're both graduates here, but obviously it left an indelible mark on you, and so you marked your body for. So like, why did Illinois mean that much to you?
You know, I think there's a couple reasons. You know, coming in when I did, I think I had a special opportunity as an early member of this program. You know, and I think when you get to start or not start essentially, but be at the very beginning of something like that, it just leaves an impression. I think the players I played with and the passion that they had, and I think when you, like I said, be at the beginning, it was just a different level of just like deep-rooted love for this university. And, you know, all of us were so excited to be part of something so new. And so, you know, the early experience with my teammates, I had phenomenal teammates here. And I think that also left a big impression on me. And I grew as an individual. This place is really committed to the whole approach of what these student athletes go through from top to bottom. And there's a passion here that you just doesn't leave you once you've stepped foot on this campus to play for your state, your home state, and to be a part of that too, I think is huge. And it just really set me up to find, you know, my career and also give me the confidence to jump into that as a young 20-something-year-old and know that I had this amazing experience. It helped me grow into the independent, confident person that I wanted to become.
So when this job opened up, what'd you think when you heard about it?
Yeah, I heard about it. I mean, it's always a tough situation when you're, because I'm connected as an alumni. And so with the staff and everything, changes happen in college athletics all the time. And it's part of the business. And so it was, you know, it's all the change. And as soon as it opened up, it was like, okay, this could really happen. Like, this is like, you know, the thing I've been talking about for so long. And in coaching, you never know the timing because you don't get to choose that. And for me, as soon as it opened up, it was, what can I do to get my name in the hat? You know, like, how can I get my name in there? And so I had a lot of people in my corner that, you know, a lot of people reached out to me too when it opened up, and some people, you know, really important people in my life and in my corner that still have connections to Illinois. They were, you know, also jumping on board to see how they could help. But just, yeah, it was just one of those of like, okay, like it's time to get ready, like time to start thinking about this and, you know, get my name in the hat.
So obviously you have this career where you are preparing for. You've been, yeah, as a great player, you've been in the Big Ten, and then you become a head coach. How did you prepare for the process with Sarah Burton and with Josh Whitman? What was that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, moving from Ohio University to a step up like this in the Power Four in the Big Ten, obviously to Illinois, there's some preparation that needs to be done. I think it was getting my, you know, ducks in a row with what I wanted this to look like if I were to take over the program. I think culturally, and then also trying to, you know, find the right staff members that could be on board with me for this, because it takes a certain level of coaching to develop players at this level. And you want to have people in your corner that know how to do that. And so I think it was just the best preparation to get my stuff together and create the vision that I want to bring here and what I believe in we can do with this program. And so kind of organizing all that, getting the right people on the phone to help me out, and then finding the right people that wanted to be a part of this with me.
What stood out to you about the process that they put you through, Illinois put you through?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty impressive process. I think, you know, obviously Josh has been crushing it here for the last decade, like as a, you know, his passion as an alum also, I think, is what sticks out to me. And I think we have that in common. And I think that really shined through, I think, in the interview process, just both of our mutual love for this place and what it means to us as individuals. And Sarah Burton is phenomenal. She's been amazing through this process. She really believes in this place also and what they're doing here. And I think there's just an energy in this department through my experience that the belief and the passion run really deep. I think there's a community of just connectedness and family. It truly means a lot to the coaches here and everyone in this department that we're all fighting for the same thing, you know, to be the best we can be on the field and represent this community the best we can off. And so there's just a really interlocked connection. It feels like steady, it feels sturdy, and it feels like it's moving forward at a pace that I'm excited about. And hopefully, you know, through the process was excited to be part of that with this department.
Well, Jen, as I said, you're the third coach in this program's younger history, but still, yep. You know, a couple decades here. What did you learn from the first coach, Terry Sullivan, in your time here and what she meant to you throughout your growing coaching career, too?
Yeah, she's a pusher. And that's the one thing I've always appreciated about her is that she could see things before they kind of happened a little bit in a way. I talked about that in my speech and also just what she instilled in me was a belief that I didn't know I had in myself, that I was capable of things that I didn't even see for myself. And so from the moment she recruited me, I think she had this vision. It was funny. I actually got a package from Amanda Fortune, who was a former pitcher in this program. Just a kind of a excited letter from her. And she remembers the first time we practiced together and how she knew that Coach Sullivan had found someone that could help me in the offense. And it's just, I think she gave me an ability just to see things in myself I didn't see before. And, you know, she just works her butt off every single day as a coach. You could just feel that as a player for her. She's a hard worker. So we felt that from her and it instilled that in us. And just her passion for Illinois, you know, always shine through, and it has been carried with me forever. And she's always been in my corner since the day I left here. And she was one of the first people to call me when this job opened up. And so she's been integral in everything I've done in my coaching journey and really just gave me the blueprint for what I wanted to become as a coach.
Well, Jenna, what can Illinois softball be? What should Illini softball be?
Yeah, I'm not a big word or user of the word should. I think it sets things up for just expectations. And I think for me and coming in and being an alum and just talking to the alums, I think there's a lot of passion, right, for this program and where people want to see it. I think, you know, being in this conference is the strongest it's ever been, right, with the additions of the West Coast into the Big Ten, but also a conference that competes at the highest level nationally. And so for us, I think it's about figuring out who we are on the field and what we have, you know, on the field as far as coming together as a team and finding ways to win in different ways, I guess I would say. I think one of the goals for us is to figure out how to become more of a winning program in all the different ways. I think what we want it to be is a competitor in the conference, right? We want to compete in the Big Ten. We want to get back to the Big Ten tournament consistently. We want to put ourselves in a position down the road for potential NCAA opportunities. But the first step is for us to figure out how to win consistently and come together as a team. But I think myself, our staff, everybody in this softball community really just wants to see Illinois compete at a high level consistently and find a better, balanced scale of wins to losses, you know, and to compete nationally week in and week out.
We've probably used the word culture a little too much, but it's real. It seems real, right? What are the non-negotiables for a Jenna Hall program? Like what's the foundation of what you want to build here?
Yeah, I mean, we have our four pillars to our culture that are heart, attitude, loyalty, and legacy. And, you know, I'm not a big rules person. We have standards that we'll compete at every single day and that we'll focus on. But the biggest thing is doing the right thing and being a good person. Like, that's the standard. Like, how do we involve that in every aspect of the field, off the field, and just our day-to-day behavior and how we compete with each other and then against across the field. So I think those four foundational pillars, you know, our standards that we have, it's really just about making the right decision, being a good person, and being really invested fully into what we do every single day. But, you know, I don't try to micromanage their life or keep them all like in one place. We want them to be the independent, authentic people that they are. And so for us, it's about living in those four pillars, you know, loving the game and all the things that come with it and ourselves and our teammates, choosing to see the good and choosing to be positive in moments where it's tough. And then also just leaving the best legacy you can and sticking true to this university every single day. But let's do the right thing. Let's be good people and let's play really competitive high level softball.
As you said, the last staff, Tyra had a really good run here early on in her tenure and obviously went off a little bit. So what are the challenges for you as you try to build this to what you want to get it to, especially as you said, like the Big Ten has changed with the additional teams, obviously pay for play and NIL, all of that. Like, what are the challenges you face as you try to build this to what you want to get to?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge would be convincing this next group of players over the years to come and bet on Illinois and convincing them of what our staff is capable of and what this team is capable of. You know, I think the staff that we've created here, a couple of them will be announced as this week, you know, continues to progress. I think it's a really experienced, high-level developers at the Power Four level that have been here before, you know, and know how to produce at this level. And so I think, you know, the challenge is just getting the recruits to believe in what we see as the vision, right? You're selling the vision right now. I think the other challenges for myself is seeing what we have. You know, there's talent in this program. I've told every player I've talked to, like, you know, we have some roster spots we want to fill, I think, as a coaching staff with the portal this summer. But overall, like, the passion and the talent, it's here. We just got to put it back together, make the pieces fit the way they need to fit, because there's a lot of really good softball players in this program that I'm excited to work with. And but I think in the future, it's convincing these recruits of what, you know, the vision is. I had a really nice conversation with Shauna Green on my interview, and she was such a helpful person to talk to. And just, I'm really impressed and with what she's done in her short time here. And I think it's something that we want to, you know, not to say mirror, but I see the capabilities of what we can do. But she's also been really helpful with the challenges that she faced and how that kind of like lines up with what we're going through here in the softball program. So, but just, you know, sharing the vision with passion and getting the recruits to believe in what we believe in.
You started mentioning like selling a vision before you can actually even show it on the field or the competitive court. And yep. I thought, Shauna, like, what did you learn from her about how she built it? What can you take away from the conversations with her?
You know, the biggest thing I've taken from her and just talking to other coaches is to stick to that vision, to believe in it, to trust in it, and just to be myself and who I am as a coach. I think that's the biggest thing is not to try to change because I'm changing locations. It's sticking to what I've been doing and sticking to who I am and then spreading that passion and that love that way. And people will feel it, you know, when they talk to us as a staff, when they talk to me, when I speak to recruits. And Shauna was very helpful in expressing that, like, keep that love and that passion, because she could feel it when we chatted. And she said to really push that out into the recruits, but to just stay true to who we are and coach the game at the highest level.
I'm wondering, how does being a player at Illinois, you know, a while ago, how does that help you with taking on this job now?
I think for me, it's one, I feel like there's a connection that the team now has to me that you can't really sever. You know, we're connected now in a way that is forever. And once you join this alumni group and are part of this program, you're stuck, you know, you're stuck with us forever, I should say, because they're a passionate group. But I think there's a connection now that I can have between each of these players that's different, you know, that sets it apart. And so I think they know that they're going to get every ounce of me for this program. Because they know how much it means to me. So I think that really kind of connects us in a way that nobody else really can.
How did your time at Ohio State prepare you for the Big Ten as a coach?
Yeah, I mean, I grew tremendously there when I was there for 7 years, and it was early in my coaching career as an assistant. But the way I grew there and just developed as a coach and as a human was integral to like my process as a coach and how I've gone through my journey. It reminds you of what the talent level and the softball is like in this conference. It's phenomenal. It's a competitive weekend, day in and day out. Every time you step on the field now, you know, with the additions of a few more, you know, the West Coast teams with UCLA, Washington, and Oregon, it's elevating it even more. And so being in the Big Ten just shows you what the talent level is, what it takes to win at that level, and to compete and create a program that can consistently get into the NCAA tournament. And that's what I was most proud of when we were there, is just creating a product and a program that knows how to win at the highest level to set themselves up for a postseason bid. And so that prepared me to hopefully work our way toward that here at Illinois.
What'd you learn about yourself as a head coach when you get the job at Ohio and you have obviously success, MAC Coach of the Year? You obviously have a lot of success in that conference. Like, what was that as part of your journey you're talking about? What kind of growth did you make there?
Yeah, I told Josh on my interview, I never really thought the head coaching route was going to be my route, to be honest. And so over time, though, you know, you grow and you learn and start to see yourself thinking about, okay, if I was doing it, what would I do if I was in that chair? And really grateful I spent the amount of time I did as an assistant. I spent 16 years being an assistant coach, and it was the right amount of time to set me up for this chair and at Ohio University. And just because I know what it takes to be there, and I respect it a lot to be a head coach, what it looks like. And, you know, I thought that my skills were better fit for an assistant role, but once I got to Ohio and got in there, I think I've learned that my skills overall are better fit for a head coach's role in the sense of what I can get out of myself and what I can give to the players. And so
I was going to say, why do you feel that now compared to before?
Yeah, I think before I was, you know, the relationships you have as an assistant are hard to replace. You know, there's just a level of connection that you get with your players when you're an assistant and also the one not making the final decision. I think there's a different line there. And so being in the head role, I thought, you know, it would change my relationships, not, you know, being in the head coach's role and being the one that handles all that. But it came to be that I think culture and helping young women grow is where my best skills sit. I think culture and just creating an atmosphere of wanting to do the right thing, wanting to be that good person, wanting to compete at a high level. And it's kind of transitioned away where I feel like I can build that and bring that out of people. And as an assistant, you don't get that opportunity as much. You're more like a follower in the sense of that area when it comes to culture. And so now getting to lead a culture, I found that it's really kind of where my niche is and what I'm really, really good at.
Well, Jenna, I can't thank you enough for your time here, because you have a lot to do right now. You got to move family.
No, we got this. We're good.
You have a ton to do with your roster. Like, what are the next steps for you as you try to put together a roster that can help you set that foundation, set that culture? Like, what's the next couple weeks, couple months like for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, once I got here the next day after it got announced, I was in Champaign on that Wednesday. So it's been working on almost 2 weeks, but hit the recruiting trail, you know, right away. The portal opened that Monday of the week I got the job. And so our softball portal is in the thick of it right now. It's about halfway through. And so getting some players here on campus to recruit from the portal to fill our roster, that's, you know, been the first thing we've gotten into. Obviously connecting with all of my current players and our recruits that we have lined up for the next few years. And just getting acclimated into the community. You know, I've went and saw Shorty Eichelberger about a week ago. Love to see her. I haven't seen her in a long time. And she's still as feisty as she was 20 years ago when I was here. And but just getting to know everybody in the department, getting the recruiting trail going and getting some players here to fill out rosters, you know, step one.
Obviously resources is a big part at this level, right? And Josh has really armed a lot of his coaches with the resources they need to succeed. What did you have to hear from them to really feel like, hey, not only is this my alma mater, but this is a place I can have success?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, they recognize where the program is and what softball at this level is getting into, you know, financially across the country, just like the expectations and the growth of softball. And so they're committed. You know, Josh is he communicated that to me very well on my interview, just his commitment to this program. And he knows that he wants it in a certain place. And, you know, we're here to help do that. But I think, you know, the biggest challenges right now for us are just the financial piece of what softball's grown into, right? So how do we create an NIL opportunities for, you know, future players and create a space where that we're part of that conversation, you know? And there's no doubt that the financial commitment that he's made to the softball program, and it's helped me get some really high level coaches in with myself to help build this back up. But we're very aware of what we need. I think the conversations are now starting on how we can get to that when it comes to recruiting the best players in the country.
What do you make of how the sport has come since you were a player?
It's amazing. I mean, obviously, whenever you're, you know, it's kind of funny when my senior year was the first year of ESPNU. So that really will take you back. But I remember that moment of us, we played Michigan on ESPNU, and it was like, we were like, this is amazing. And now you look, you know, fast forward, it's the progress that you hope to see and that you want for your sport. You know, and we can look at it and be like, man, I wish this for me, but I'm just so pumped for these athletes and the showcase that they get to have, the way, you know, TV has embraced our sport from February all the way till June. It's amazing. I mean, these athletes are phenomenal. And with the product they put on the field is so fun to watch. And the one thing about softball that we've all known, all of us that have been in it for a long time, know that once you see it, it's hard to not come back. The energy, the passion that you feel when they're on the field, is just an exciting time. And I'm just so proud of our sport and the progress and just the commitment to elevating it to the level that it deserves to be played at.
Well, Jenna Hall, I'll let you get back to it. I know you got a lot of work to do with recruiting and all of that, but we really appreciate the time. Congratulations on the job again. Happy for you and your family, and we'll catch you soon.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Great stuff from Kyle Tosk and Jenna Hall. Really appreciate their time. Some good insight from Kyle on Illinois basketball recruiting, and Jenna Hall, got to know her a little bit and what she envisions for this program. Has some work cut out for her, but obviously a passionate alumni with some success as a coach. Be interesting to see what she can make of that Illinois softball program. But thank you for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcasts. If you're watching us on YouTube, hit that like button down below, subscribe, and hit that notifications bell. But for Kyle Toss, Jenna Hall, I'm Jeremy Warner. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. And we'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.